Hi, good morning everyone. I think we all probably realise what special day it is today in the sort of in the world and in, even in our lives, don't we? It's Father's Day, isn't it?
Yeah.
As we were praying in there, I was thinking that Father's Day is every day when we think about God, isn't it? That we have so much to thank Him for that we couldn't just allocate it to one day, could we? To celebrate and to thank Him, but we have to thank Him every day by the way we live. This morning I'm going to be continuing the story of Joseph. You might think you might have been expecting the Father's Day sermon this morning, but in a way it is, because when I'm thinking about it, there's two fathers involved in this story. You know, Joseph's father and his father God. And then today it becomes a three-father story, so you'll see as we go along that it is to do with Father's Day. My title for this morning is God Speak. God speaks and lives. God speaks and lives. And you'll see why when we start reading the verses and we go through this story. Well, for those that were here, last time we saw Joseph brought out of jail, stood before Pharaoh. He had his quick wash. With God's power, he interpreted Pharaoh's dream, didn't he? About there was going to be 7 years of plentiful harvest and then there was going to be 7 years of famine. And we looked at who's the daddy now, sort of God debasing Pharaoh really, and the gods of Pharaoh, and saying, look, I'm in charge, you can do nothing about the 7 years of famine, you know, and the 7 years of plenty that's coming. In return for what Joseph did, through God's power, Pharaoh made Joseph his main man, and put him in charge of everything that Pharaoh had, second in command. Quite a big promotion, that. Not only did God show Pharaoh who was the boss, but also the magicians and so-called wise men were also shown up, because Joseph could interpret the dream through God's power. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't interpret it at all. So here, after 13 years a slave, now at 30 years old, Joseph comes to power as second in command of all Egypt. That's quite a job, isn't it? Everything was instantly turned around. It's sort of a rags-to-riches story, isn't it, if you looked at it that way. Poor boy becomes rich man, slave becomes master. I wonder if Joseph still thought about the dream that he originally had, you know, about his brothers bowing down to him at this particular time in his life. I think there was that much going on in that instance that maybe he might have forgot. I don't know. Life was moving on at a high pace now. And would Joseph forget God? Would Joseph forget his family? Well, we know that he doesn't, and we're going to look at why he doesn't. First of all, I just wanted to read you from chapter 41 of Genesis. I'm just going to read you verse 45 and 46. I might not interpret this right, but... And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath Paneah, and he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Pori Pera, however they call him, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Couple of pretty standard verses there, you might think, but when I started looking at it, I found a lot in these few verses. First of all, the first significant thing that happened here, that Pharaoh gave Joseph a new name. Zaphnath Paneah. Basically interpreted as my title this morning, God speaks and lives. God speaks and lives. What an impression God had on Pharaoh, that Pharaoh's thoughts and on God had been changed. Pharaoh had all the gods that he ever thought there was already. And yet, I think that in this way, God changed his mind. I don't think Pharaoh had ever seen anything like this happen before. And when he prayed to all these false gods, I bet he'd never had one that had answered like that. Well, we know he hasn't, because they weren't true gods, were they? A God that actually speaks, and a God that actually lives, you know, and does stuff. you think about the situation there, when Pharaoh gave Joseph that new name, Joseph couldn't say, "No, I don't really like that. I'll just carry on being called Joseph." That's not an option, is it? When Pharaoh gave him a name, he had to accept that name. It becomes his name. How would you fancy being called God Speaks and Lives Turner? Or God Speaks and Lives Cowley? You know, or McEwen, God Speaks and Lives McEwen. And somebody asked you your name and you had to say, "My name is God Speaks and Lives McEwen." Can you imagine telling people that? Yeah? And what sort of thing would that cause as Joseph, as it says there, went throughout the land? Yeah. You know, and he'd got this new name which Pharaoh had given him, not picked it himself. And it was this: God Speaks and Lives. No doubt, if you had that name, wherever you went, people would ask how you came to be called by that name. Well, I'm only giving my opinion here, but I think God moved on Pharaoh's heart to call Joseph God Speaks and Lives, so that God's fame would be spread and broadcast throughout all Egypt. Because at the end of verse 45 and verse 46, he uses the very similar phrases of Joseph went throughout all the land of Egypt. That was the first thing he did, you know, before he started planning or whatever. He went throughout all the land of Egypt, and you can imagine them saying, "Here comes," whatever his name were in Egyptian. But God Speaks, God Lives, you know, Joseph. And they're all going to be wondering why he's been called that. They don't know. 99.9% of the people of Egypt at that time didn't know the God of Joseph. Pharaoh knew him. Pharaoh had encountered him. But no one else had. But by the time the end of the famine had finished, then everyone would have. So God's, just by Pharaoh giving Joseph that name, the name of God was spread throughout Egypt, wasn't it? It must have been. All of Egypt were about to see what the true God can do, and that when God speaks, he does what he says. Not like their dead gods, not like their gods that they worshipped. A God that actually speaks and does stuff. A God that actually lives. Just going to read from verse 47 to 49 of this same chapter. "Now in the seven plentiful years the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the foods in the cities, in the land, up in every city, and the food of the fields which surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain, as the sand of the sea, until he stopped counting it, for it was immeasurable." The second thing which I'd like you to notice this morning from these verses is that God is faithful and true and exact to what he said he was going to do. He did it exactly to the letter. The story is Joseph's, but when you look at it, it's all about God, you know, and God being over all the gods of Egypt. You know, the Egyptians had gods of harvest, you know, and gods of sunshine and gods of rain and all these things they made sure that they prayed to and sacrificed to every single year or day or however long it had to be. But none of them could stop the 7 years of plenty or 7 years of famine. There's only God. Now we see God is fulfilling what he said that he would do to Joseph and to Pharaoh and to the land. In verse 47, I'm not going to look at it really, but he said there would be 7 years of plentiful harvest. Not just harvest, but plentiful harvest. If we look at verse 48, it says that Joseph gathered up all, you know, the harvest, and he put it in places around all the cities and places where the harvest were, so that when they needed it, they would have it. And here I see Joseph used his God-given gift of administration and organization again to get the food collected and stored all over Egypt. One of my favorite verses this morning is, and it might seem a bit strange, but it's verse 49. "Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting it, for it was immeasurable." It tells us so much about God, this verse. And I can imagine Joseph, or God speaks and lives, as he was called then, to be trying to keep a record of everything and how much grain there was and where that grain was. He was that type of man, wasn't he? He seems to organise everything and, you know, get everything in order and do things. He likes to do that. And then he just gets to this point where his head's just gone. You know, he no longer can write down or measure or weigh or work out how much grain there is, because God has just done so much, you know, in these 7 years that he can't count it anymore. It's become like sand, grains of sand. It's become innumerable. I can imagine him trying to keep that record, but he didn't have any chance, did he? When God does something, he does it bigger and better than we could ever imagine. That's what he did there with Joseph. Bigger and better than ever he could imagine. And that's what happened to Joseph. So much blessing of grain, it became as numerous as sand. If you think about that statement in Egypt, how much sand is there in Egypt? Has anyone ever been to Egypt for the holidays? The whole place is built on a desert, isn't it? And sand and rock, and there's very little greenery there. It's nearly all sand. When he says the grain was more numerous than sand, that sort of gives you some idea of sort of the sort. It will, probably wasn't, but you know what I mean? It gives you some idea of the vastness of the grain that had been saved. That was all God. It wasn't a normal 7 years of harvest. It was a 7 years of plentiful harvest that God boasted so that his word could come to pass. It also debased their gods of harvest and sunshine and rain and whatever as he did that, because they could do nothing about that. They couldn't help in that way. If you don't remember anything else from this sermon this morning, try to remember these three words, and all these three words occur between verse 47 and verse 49. They might be slightly different in your version, but they're all there. The first one is plentiful. The second one is abundantly. And the third one is the one that we've just looked at, immeasurable. These are words, descriptive words, which we can apply to what God does as he fulfills his words and dreams in our lives. God is plentiful. God is abundant, and God is immeasurable. We can never measure anything that God does. We're just not capable, just as Joseph was not capable of numbering those grains. We've been looking in the Bible studies at, behold, what manner of love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. The God of plentifulness and abundance and immeasurability has lavished on us his love in such a way that we can never measure it, we can never understand it, we will never get to the start or the end of it. When the dream comes true, God does it with style and with power and with immeasurable abundance. We will be in no doubt that God speaks and lives and is faithful to his word. You know, before the 7 years of plenty were over, we see massive changes in Joseph's life. We've got to this part of the story again where it leaps on in years, you know, in a very few verses. First of all, he's just been made second in command by Pharaoh. He can do anything he likes, apart from only man above him is Pharaoh. Secondly, in verse 45, I read it quite quickly, but it says that Pharaoh gave him a wife, the daughter of whoever he is, the priest of On. He gets married. What a massive thing that is in your life to put in three words. He gets married. You know, Pharaoh gives him a wife. He didn't have a choice of the wife. The wife was given him, was chosen for him. I think if Joseph could have chosen, he wouldn't have chosen the daughter of a pagan priest, would he? Probably. But he didn't have a choice in that, did he? He had to get married to this woman. And it says there, priest of On. Well, On is the sun god, is the Egyptian sun god. So he was sort of getting married to the daughter of the main priest of that worshipped and ordered the worship of their sun god On. Useless information, but it's there. And even though Joseph had to marry this woman, he never lost his faith in God, and he never altered his faith in God. As we can see from what happened sort of in the next few verses. By the time we get to verse 50, it says, And to Joseph were born two sons before the years of the famine came, whom this woman had given him. So even before the 7 years of plenty had finished, before the famine came, Joseph had had two sons. So here we are, we've moved on. Here we see the third father now in the story. Joseph's father, the father, God. And now Joseph himself has become a father in a strange place. His firstborn son, as you probably know, he called Manasseh. Does anybody know what that means? I couldn't remember. I only knew because I looked it up. Manasseh means making forget. Making forget. And Joseph says in verse 51, I have called him this because God has made me forget the hard times in my father's house. I'll read it exactly in my version. I've called him Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. He named his son Making Forget. It's not like today where we name John or Paul or, you know, words that we actually like or are fashionable. They actually named people for reasons and for seasons and for times. And his firstborn son he called Making Forget, because God had made him forget those 13 years of, you know, hardship and even the things that had gone off in his family. I think when he uses the word forget here, I don't think that he could ever blank it completely out of his mind, but the circumstances have been changed, haven't they? God had started to come good, you know, it had started to come together. Even though he wasn't in his homeland, it couldn't really get any better, could it? He'd become a big man. He'd got, as you'd imagine, a beautiful wife. He'd now got a son, you know, and his new life was there and it was being established. God was, in a way, making him forget the hard years. So that was what he called his first son. In verse 52, it says he had a second son, and he called his son Ephraim. Once again, does anybody know what Ephraim means? I'll look this up to find out. It means fruitfulness. So his second son he called Fruitfulness, because he said God had caused him to be fruitful in a land where he'd been afflicted. It's in verse 52. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God had caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. In a place where he'd been tortured, in a place where he'd been a slave. Now in that place, God had still managed to cause him to be fruitful. In a place where he'd been a slave, he'd now become second in command of the whole land. That's God, isn't it? God caused him to become fruitful, and he named his son Fruitfulness, his second son. And this is what happens when God turns things around for us. He helps us to forget the bad things that have gone on in the past and brings fruitfulness into our lives. Obviously, most importantly, spiritual fruitfulness comes, you know, as God turns our lives around, as God applies what he wants to do to our lives. Sometimes it's physical fruitfulness, sometimes it's practical fruitfulness. For Joseph, it was everything, wasn't it? He probably went from nothing to having everything in a very short space of time. When it seemed as though there was no light for Joseph when he was in the prison, bam, you know, God pours in everything that he got in immeasurable abundance all over Joseph's life. You know, it wasn't just a bit, was it? He didn't just like, oh, right, we'll get you a place, you know, serving in Pharaoh's council, and then you can like step up over the years and bam, like that. You know, God put him second in command, brought him a wife, brought him children, all within a short space of time. And all of a sudden, everything's different. Even though it was over years, it was all different, wasn't it? That's what an encounter with a plentiful and abundant and immeasurable God of faith can do, isn't it? A faithful God. It changes everything. So after 13 years a slave, the dream actually starts to unfurl and begins to reveal itself, you know, in Joseph's life. In less than seven years, Joseph is promoted, he's married, he's got two sons, he had loads of wealth and fame. And Joseph attributed all of this to God. He never once claimed that he'd done it by himself, did he? He always said it was God that interpreted the dreams. And I'm sure that he never forgot God in his life. He hadn't forgot the dream, and he hadn't forgot God. Finally this morning, just to prove God's faithfulness and accuracy of his word, verse 53 and 54, then the 7 years of plenty which were in the land of Egypt ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. The famine was in all the land, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So just as surely as the 7 years of plenty had been as God had said, now the 7 years of famine, exactly to the day started. Now it says, well, as soon as the 7 years ended, the other 7 years started, just as God had said. God is faithful to his word. God is accurate in fulfilling his word in our lives. And God is sure to do as he says he will do in our lives and through the dreams that he gives us. And I'll leave you with those four words this morning, which I started with: God speaks and lives. Amen.